This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
We're going to start with a nice word on Parshas Chikas. Zera Kodesh and the Agada Kala both share a similar idea about Zoyz Chikas HaTorah. Now we know Zoyz Chikas HaTorah is referring to the Pura Adima. That's the Chok of the Torah, as Rashi explains. But they both say that Zoyz Chikas HaTorah is said in a general way, Chikas HaTorah, because the whole Torah is a Chok. The whole Torah is a Chok. They must oilam, they want Eden to think into why we do the Torah. And there are parts of the Torah that we could understand, and it seems that there's a reason for it. And the attitude that a Yid has when being Mekayim Torah Mitzvahs was Chikas HaTorah. We don't know why, we don't understand the reasoning, we're not here for the reason, it doesn't have to be something that resonates with us. So it's Chikas HaTorah. That's the Kibbul Samach Shemaim. And that's why, even though the Pura Adima does really have a reason, as Rashi explains, but we don't want to talk about that reason. But it's not just because we're avoiding that specific reason, it's because we don't do Torah Mitzvahs because it has reasons, we do it because that's what Hashem wants from us. There are many things in life that we could say have reasons, and things that don't seem to have reasons. The idea of a reason, the way it's called in the when we talk about a chok, there's a chok b'li tam. There's something called a tam. Tam means a taste, something that's desirable, tastes good. There are things in life that has a good taste. That's what we enjoy, that's what we like, that's what we would have picked, that's what we're tempted toward and attracted to. That's the things that have a tam. Then there are things in life that don't have a tam. They're not appealing. They're not what we would have wanted. They're a chok. There are things that we know are good for us. How do we know it's good? Either because we know it's good. For example, somebody's drinking water, right? Kokosh cake is good because we know it tastes good. Water, it doesn't taste good, but we know it's important to drink a lot of water. So if somebody's drinking water, they're not enjoying it necessarily unless they're very thirsty. Like they would have enjoyed something very sweet, but they know it's good. And even though it doesn't have a great taste, they do it anyway. A lot of things in life are good and desirable, and things we would have chosen and we're attracted to. And then there are things in life that are good, but we wouldn't have necessarily chosen them. We don't even appreciate them. How do we know they're good, though? Because what Hashem sent us. When Hashem sends a person something going on in your life, there are the things that are going on in your life that we would call they have a tam, and there are things that are more chag b'li tam. And sometimes it's the emin and betochen that Hashem knows what He's doing, and that we know is good for us. Sometimes it's even more than that. Sometimes there are things in our life that we know they're good. We know they're good. But we don't feel it, and we don't enjoy it. And we still know it's good. Because logically, we know that this is really good, and this is the best choice for me, and this is what is going to bring the best benefit and the best outcome. And I happen not to like it. And that's what takes sometimes a certain amount of, I don't want to call it maturity, because it's not easy. And not necessarily somebody who's not able to do this is immature. But very often, we have to have the attitude of Zoyz Chikas HaTorah. So with that, let me just read a question over here. Hi, I've been married for X amount of months so far. Okay, I guess by now that I'm reading the question, it's already quite a bit over a year. But, it's still relatively, when this question was written, it was under a year of marriage. I'm really not sure what my problem is. I just know that my relationship with my husband is not the way it's supposed to be. He's everything I could have hoped for. A Talmud Chochem, with the most amazing midas, smart and mature, with a small age difference. I'm not sure why I'm having such a hard time. All I know is that it's definitely my problem, since aside from the normal adjustments of getting used to married life, he's been amazing since day one. He may not be as fun to be around or as deep as I would have liked my spouse to be, but why am I having such a hard time focusing on the many good traits of his, and instead, I just can't bring myself to enjoy spending time with him or being vulnerable and sharing my deeper thoughts and feelings with him. My parents and friends are all wondering why I'm not planning a vacation, like most newlyweds. But I'm just changing a few identifying details, but otherwise. But I can't even think about spending a whole week just in his presence with no breaks of routine, work, and koilu. It makes me feel so anxious all the time. He would love it if I would share more about myself, talk more, and he's eager to listen to anything I have to say. Can you give me some tips on learning to like him for who and what he is, and enjoy being in his company and sharing my life and its details with him? It would be a great help if you can answer me. Thank you so much. P.S. Also, my question is, does this seem like a simple Shalom Bayis problem that can be helped with guidance from Shalom Bayis coaches? Or might it be an underlying issue that I need help from a therapist for? What do you think? The reason I'm asking this is because I've listened to countless Shalom Bayis lessons. They seem to be covering every issue under the sun, but nothing close to the problems I'm experiencing. So I'm wondering if it might be a bigger problem. Okay. Very good question. So let me just start by saying that I say this often, when somebody's dealing with an issue and you're writing to me, so if you're writing to me because you want my advice or you want to reach out for help or whatever it is, you know, that's one thing. But if you're just looking for me to address this in a class in a few months' time, that's obviously not a responsible way to get help. I assume, I don't even remember, but I assume that my response to this email was that I could address it in an upcoming class, and if you'd like to talk about how you might be able to be helped, that would be best. But what I do want to mention is that it's important for whoever is struggling in any area in life, especially in such an area where you're feeling like something's wrong and it's just not working and you're not happy, don't struggle alone. Reach out. Reach out for help. You can reach out to a kala teacher, you can reach out to a rebbetzin, you can reach out to anyone you want. I'm not going to go now into the details of who and how to reach out yet, but it's important that if somebody's struggling, they shouldn't struggle alone. It's very hard for people to deal with their own issues and help themselves. And, you know, Baruch Hashem, there's a world out there, not necessarily a world of help and problems. I just mean there's a world out there, and nobody's living isolated, and nobody should even try to help themselves if they see it's not going anywhere. So let's just start with trying to determine, like, how big a problem is this? Is it a regular problem? Is it an irregular problem? What's considered regular and irregular? That's something very important to determine. I mentioned, what was it, a week or two ago about the magazine sickness. You know, people read something or hear something like, yeah, me too, and all of a sudden everything becomes a problem. It's important to be able to classify what's normal and to be expected and what's not normal and has to be dealt with. You know, obviously, there's always the coloring book myth of what marriage looks like, what family life looks like, what personal life looks like. You see guys smiling and everything's beautiful and everyone's just talking to each other and enjoying their company. And, you know, it's not always the way it works, obviously. Especially when you're newly married, which you're mentioning, I'm just talking it out. When you're newly married, there's always certain adjustments to make, and some transitions and adjustments are normal, and some people can't handle that either. Some people can handle that. Single life with your friends or, you know, bukhrim or girls, you know, there was a certain flexibility. You were able to have fun. You were able to enjoy yourself. You were able to stick around the people who you liked best, most. You were able to stay away from people who got you nervous. You were able to stay away from somebody getting you nervous the day that they're getting you nervous and then reconnect with them the next day. There's a lot of flexibility and fun, if you want to call it, in single life that definitely changes right away. Some people can handle that. There's also a certain familiarity, you know, before you got married, you had friends who you knew already for so long, and now you're meeting someone new, and you're living with someone new, and you have a full-time relationship with somebody you just got to know. There's definitely a lot of changes that happen. And for some people, unmarried life just seems to be a simpler option. Unfortunately, as people get older, you have older singles who they get so used to and so stuck on certain parts of unmarried life that they can't even fathom going into something that's going to break that that routine. And it's very sad. I must have mentioned this little joke about the guy who complained to his parents, why'd you give me this friend of my idol and this girl I don't know to get married to? Bobby married Zaidi, and Mommy married Tati. And for me, they found someone off the street. You know, but that's how it looks sometimes, because unmarried life was a certain comfort zone. Watching your parents or grandparents who are married already for a long time also looked like a certain comfort zone for many people, Baruch Hashem. And noticing the transition and the difficulty that happens, that comes along with it, some people just aren't ready for it. They don't realize what that is. And sometimes, if couples don't right away get into that feeling where their mamash gaga over the spouse, and everything's just, wow, it's wonderful, it's amazing, they don't have that, for some it's like an infatuation in terms of the relationship, for some it's just living on a high, living on a cloud because they're newly married, enjoying the new life. Some people, when they don't experience that right away, they start questioning themselves and start questioning their whole relationship. And and when the beginning is a little tough or a little difficult to get used to, it throws them off, and they're waiting for the magic to happen, and it doesn't happen because they're all tense and they're all nervous about it. So a lot of that is normal. And very many people experience it. Well, I'll say not everyone, but a lot of it is normal. How do you know if what you're dealing with is not normal? Well, it's not easy to determine and give a real guideline for that. But it's like a lot of other things. When it comes to OCD, for example, without going into the details, if somebody is a little OCD, they like when things are clean. Well, they're a little OCD and they check to make sure the door is locked. They check three times. Three times, that's it. Never more. Is that OCD? Does it have to be dealt with? You have to go around to a doctor. You have to get some medication. You have to start questioning yourself. You have to start counting if it was only three times or four times to get OCD over the OCD. The answer is, one of the simple answers is, that if it's not interfering with your life, and everything's going on as you like, and you're able to clean twice a day, and it's okay, it doesn't take much time, you don't scream at anyone, for making dirty, And you don't go crazy when you don't have the time to clean the extra time that you'd love to. But in general, you do. As long as it's not interfering with your life, it's relatively okay. Most people have some OCD somewhere, right? Some people repeat themselves, and some people repeat themselves, and some people repeat themselves. And everyone has it in their own way, where they want to make sure that something was done right, whether it's a certain amount of perfectionism, or it's a certain amount of whatever. And it's okay. It's okay. A certain amount of insecurity. Everyone has their little thing, and as long as it's not interfering with your life, you're okay. So as long as you're experiencing some kind of transition issue or some kind of difficulty or some kind of unhappiness or some kind of something, but it's not interfering with your life, and you're moving on and you're making it work and you're looking for ways to make it work and you're happy about it and it's okay, then generally that's fine. It's when you're getting stuck and it's already many months and you're not able to share feelings and thoughts and you're not able to enjoy each other's company, you're not able to let things happen, and you're either staying very stuck or even falling back because slowly you're becoming more and more unhappy, that is definitely where it seems to be becoming a bigger issue. But in general, when people say, oh, I could also relate to those feelings, it's fine. I think most people could. I would also assume that maybe after this many months since this letter was written till now, it could be that a lot of this dissolved. And if you see it dissolving slowly, that's also normal. That's a good sign. So it's okay if for somebody this process takes a week or a month or 3 months or 6 months, but we'll talk more about that momentarily. Another thing that is also so important here, which you mentioned, another thing you mentioned over here, you know, let me just go back 1 second. This is not OCD. I thought I jotted it down, but being that you know, transition and beginnings are hard, for some people it takes longer and for some people shorter. Many people who are married for 10 years plus will tell you, looking back, they wouldn't have been able to tell you on the way, but looking back, they'll say, yeah, the first year taka was like very this or very that. It was like took 2 years till we really knew each other and got used to things. Now, as they were freshly married, and the first 2 years, they wouldn't have been able to tell you, we don't feel it yet, we're starting to feel it more. You know, when you're in the game, you don't notice it. But after 10 years, you start looking back and say, yeah, that's like a whole different story than it was in the beginning. So for some people, when you're in the beginning and getting a little nervous about when's it going to happen, be patient, let it happen. And if over time it's happening, even just very slowly, very gradually, but it's happening, that's also a very good sign. Don't wait for the magic to just burst one day. And hopefully looking back a year later, 2 years later, 3 years later, you'll see that, yeah, in the beginning I wasn't comfortable, but Hashem, it grew on me in a good and healthy way. So that's also all part of the regular. The irregular is, like I said, when it's interfering with your life and it's not getting any better, and if anything is getting worse, and as time goes on, you're getting more stuck in your issue and more stuck in your obsessive unhappiness, or whatever it is that's bothering you, and that's when it would be considered a problem. Now, you asked if this is a Shalom Bayis problem or you're the problem. You start off by saying, I know that I'm the problem. Later, you ask if maybe it is a problem. Anyway, I'm not hearing any Shalom Bayis problem. I just want to make sure. You're listening to Shalom Bayis classes. I don't hear any Shalom Bayis issue at all over here. Now, I understand why you might consider it a Shalom Bayis issue, because it's the marriage that's becoming the issue, and before the marriage, there wasn't an issue, and other areas don't seem to be an issue, but it's not. That's not called Shalom Bayis. It's not an interpersonal issue. It's not a relationship issue, necessarily, where the relationship is a problem. It sounds like you understand that you have some issue accepting and connecting, which is fine. For some people, it's harder. And it could be there's even reasons to it. For whatever reason, your spouse could have or would have been something else that may have been easier. It might be true. But it seems that you understand that it's your issue, which is fine. Everyone's allowed to have issues. We all have them. And women especially, they don't even say there's any issue. Okay, but jokes aside, everyone has their issue to deal with, and it's fine. It's just so important to acknowledge and differentiate between personal and interpersonal. And this is where a lot of people get very stuck. If you're dealing with an issue, you have a certain insecurity or a certain unhappiness or a certain anxiety or a certain void or a certain complex or whatever it is, and you're expressing your unhappiness to your spouse, and this is men and women both, you're expressing it on someone else and making the other person at fault or the blame for the fact that you're unhappy about something, you're doing two people an injustice. You're doing it to yourself, because you're not going to get the right help if you're blaming someone else for your problems. And I see this very, very often where people are dealing with their own issues, but they're blaming it on someone else, so they're not getting the help they need, and the other person can't help them because it's not their issue, and you're just making a lot of confusion and hurt feelings. So you're not getting the help, your spouse is feeling terrible, it just turned into one big blame game with a little bit of relief of your own personal pain is that at least I can scream at someone else and make them feel bad, and you're not getting anywhere. If only more people were as brave as this woman to acknowledge, I think I might have an issue. I married someone who's a wonderful person, a good midas, mature, intelligent, Talmud Chochem, know, I think I'm having an issue if I can't focus on those good things and appreciate them. So that's very important. And fooling yourself on someone else's account, like I said, it's you're fooling yourself, which is a problem, and you're fooling someone else just so that you don't have to face your own issues. It's also a problem. Now, part of this is acknowledging it. In my book, Get Along With Everyone, there was a chapter 14. I spoke about this once already, that in the Yiddish book, I took out the chapter for a few reasons. Without going into the reasons and why people felt that the chapter wasn't written so well, or why there was a problem with it, or why people, I happen to feel it's an amazing chapter. I happen to feel it's an amazing chapter. Chapter 14 is about how people that are sensitive should be able to help themselves. Now, I'm not going to start connecting dots over here with sensitivity. All I mean to say is that one of the things, or two of the points that are mentioned in chapter 14, are that a person should acknowledge both to themselves and be able to verbalize and acknowledge and to someone else that, yes, I'm unhappy and something's bothering me and I might be just too sensitive. When you're able to realize that to yourself and to someone else, you clear the ear, and a lot of the hurt feelings that may have happened when you get offended and someone else gets defensive and you start blaming, it just falls away. I am hurt, and I'm telling myself, I might be hurt because I'm taking this too personal. And I'm telling you, I might be hurt by what you just said because I might be taking this too personal. And you just help two people, and now nobody feels bad, and maybe the person you're talking to might even be able to take you more seriously and stop hurting you in the future, and a lot of good things will come out of that, and you'll feel much better as well. So in this case, I didn't mean to necessarily point to the idea of sensitivity at all. I just mean to say that if something's bothering you, and you could be aware of it, and you could acknowledge it, and you could even talk to your husband about it, you might not realize how much that could already accomplish, and just let everyone calm down instead of dealing with this antsy feeling of what's going on, what's the thing, he's waiting for me to talk, I don't want to talk, I'm not happy, I don't know why am I not happy. Just say it and understand it and talk about it in a mature way. Now, just think of a little perspective, right? You married someone, I think I did this just a week or two ago also, and I always hope that it's being taken well. I never mean, Chaz v'Shulam, don't mean to be critical or trivialize anyone's issues at all, Chaz v'Shulam. But you did marry someone who, in your words, he's everything you could have hoped for, a Talmud Chochem, the most amazing middos, smart and mature. I mean, that's a home run. That's not a question, that's a home run. It's a home run. Now, you yourself are telling it to me, I'm just repeating it back to you. You scored a home run. Not many people could say that they married someone who's everything they hoped for, a Talmud Chochem, amazing middos, smart and mature. So a lot of people listening to this are getting a little jealous of you, which is fine. Sometimes people think that acknowledging that it could have been worse, let's call it, or acknowledging that, you know, look how much there is and so many people don't have it, some people look at it like, okay, so I'll settle for what I got. In other words, if it could have been worse, let's talk about somebody who didn't score a home run. They only married someone who's a Talmud Chochem and amazing middos. Not so mature or so smart, but a Talmud Chochem, an amazing middos, that's also, that's an 80. So sometimes you tell someone, you know, you got an 80, now many people only got a 60. The point of understanding that some people have less than you do is not the way some people think it is. Okay, some people only get a 60, I'll settle for 80. I would have wanted 100, but I'll settle for 80. Because if some people only have 60, and some have 50, and some have 40, I'm a relatively lucky person. There are people that are luckier, but I'll settle for less. And in this case as well, even though you claim to have scored 100, not 80, but there's still more than 100. I could have scored 100 and still enjoyed the relationship and had fun with this person and whatever else. So that would have been 120, right? So looking that there are people that don't have what you got, sometimes it makes it sound like, okay, so I'll settle for 100. I'll settle for 100. Sounds ridiculous, but I'll settle for 100. But it's more than that. It's much more than that. I don't think anyone's expected to feel good settling for 80 because there are people that have 60, because that would imply that you should be happy settling for 40 if there are people that have 20. If you have people who are at home and in abusive marriages, and mine's not abusive, it's just very unhealthy and not very abusive, but a little abusive, which is very uncomfortable. That's not the idea. That's not the idea. The idea of noticing, and this tzaddikim teach this, that when it comes to ruchnius, you're supposed to look at those who have more than you. When it comes to gashmius, look at those who have less than you. Looking and realizing that people have less than you just makes you appreciate what you do have. In other words, in Teva Udam, naturally, we tend to notice what we don't have more than what we do have. Why? Because whatever we have, we either take for granted or just got used to. And the parts that we don't have, it's the parts that's bothering us. So naturally, we tend to focus on what we don't have. When you focus on the fact that there are people who don't have what you do have, that's when you start noticing what you do have. When you see somebody who doesn't have the health or the wealth or the happiness or the whatever it is that you do have, and they're struggling, and they're and they're still doing their best to be productive and healthy and happy and serve Hashem that way, and wow, this is what I do have, it helps you focus on what you do have. So it's not about settling for less than you would have wanted, it's about appreciating what you have, and this is very important. Very important. So like I said, noticing that there are people who come home, women who come home or spend Shabbos or come after a day of work or go to sleep with somebody who is not a Talmid Chacham or not a Balmidis or not smart and not mature, and realizing, you know, that's pretty unpleasant. You know, to kind of imagine if I would come home to somebody who's not a Balmidis. And when I walk in through the door, the first thing he does is start blaming me for things or criticizing me for things or ignoring me or playing with his phone or I don't know what. Wow. How would I have looked then? And that might help you, this perspective might actually help you notice the things that are going good and appreciate them. So that was one of your questions, was how do I focus on the good? You start by realizing that this isn't a given. This is not a given. There are many people who are married to men, for example, that are not only not Talmid Chachomim, but barely learning anything. And they have to get the chizik from the kallah teacher who says, you're not your husband's mashgiach, and it's not your job to get him to learn. And you see him wasting away his life, and he just left yeshiva 2 years ago, and nothing doing. How is he going to raise kids? There are people that have these worries that you don't have. And this is just knowing that and acknowledging it. And everyone in their own way. I'm not only talking to this person who has, Baruch Hashem, scored 100. I'm talking to people who scored an 80 or scored 70. Noticing, acknowledging that there are people who don't have what you have just helps you appreciate what you do have. So that's one idea. But another idea, in terms of perspective, is that very often, we know what would work, we just don't want to do it. I know that if I would write a list every day of all the qualities my husband has, all the gifts that Hashem gave me, I know that would help me focus on it, but I don't want to do that. I don't want to do it. So the question remains, so how do I focus on the good? No, I know how to focus on the good, I'm just not interested. I'm not interested. Sometimes, for example, people know that if only they would thank Hashem every day, out loud, verbalize it, thank you Hashem for this, and for that, and for this, and for my fingers, and for my health, and for my husband, and that I married Talmid Chacham, and somebody who's a Bal Midos. Thank you for the fact that he's so nice to me. Thank you for the fact that he's tolerant of me. Thank you, Hashem, that even though I'm not open to him, he's still very nice to me. Thank you, Hashem, that even though I don't love spending time with him, he's still so pleasant and easy to deal with, so uncomplicated. Thank you, Hashem, for not marrying me off to somebody who's more complicated, because I don't know if I would have ever handled that. Saying these things and thinking these things and focusing on these things definitely would work. We just tend not to do that very often. Rav Avigdor Miller used to talk about thanking Hashem for every little thing and noticing the good and everything. He used to talk about noticing the sweetness in bread. You ever notice bread is sweet? No. I don't know if bread is sweet or not. But I do know that we don't always notice that bread tastes good. We don't always appreciate the fact that bread is soft and tasty because we got used to it. Not just that, but when we're in the mood of kokosh cake, bread tastes pretty bland. Well, it's only bread. I wish I would have some cake. I don't have cake, so I'll wash on bread. So when you're expecting kokosh cake, or you would want kokosh cake, you'd want something to be, like I said before, with a tam and geschmack, and you don't have that, so you're noticing the void of the geschmack. And automatically, you can't notice anymore the presence of what is good and what is tasty. And it's only when you start realizing, wait, there's hard bread, and there's old bread, and there's untasty bread, and whatever else, and this is good bread. And I want to be happy about it, and I want to think about it, and this is something that might help you in terms of perspective. Another thing I'll throw in that I mentioned from time to time is that there were many great women who were married to many great men who didn't have a fun life at all. I wouldn't even say a pleasant life, for that matter. And sometimes we look at a Rebbetzin of a big Rosh Hashiva, a big Rebbe, like, okay, there's a lot of kovet involved, there's a lot of status involved, but that's not how it started in general, right? They gave away all that and chose a life of, whether it was poverty or a life of just being umdus limin ba'ala, not enjoying the relationship because her husband was sitting and learning too much, and whatever else. Now, I'm not saying that any of us have to be on that madraga to choose it. Just remembering that there were people who actually wanted this. They wanted something that was good, and they knew it was good, and logically it was good, and mentally it was good, and emotionally it wasn't so geschmack. They didn't necessarily enjoy it and have the tam in it. It was more the chok b'li tam, but they actually chose it willingly because they believed in it and they knew it was right. And as Yidden, I think everyone could relate to certain somewhere in their life where they do something that they know is right and feel good doing it, even though it's not pleasurable or enjoyable, because that's how we're programmed to take Yiddishkeit very seriously. My point is just that in this relationship as well, being married to a Talmid Chacham with amazing middos who's mature and smart, even if you wouldn't have necessarily wanted to sign up to something that's not as fun and enjoyable, but you definitely got something that many people would have actually chose. So it's not just that people have worse than you, it's that people would have wanted this not only the people who have less than you would have wanted it, as sometimes we comfort ourselves, oh, there are people that would chalish for this, you know. No, there are people that chalish lechatchila for this, because this is what's really good. Now, after all that, let me talk about actually making things better in terms of helping the situation. Right now, I was talking about focus and perspective and realizing that it's good even if things will never change. But there are things that could change. And very often we don't let them change. We're programmed to want happiness to come to us. All of us are programmed like that. I want to sit here and have the happiness come to me. For me to go out of my comfort zone, that I'm at least comfortable in, I'm not happy, but I'm comfortable in, and look for happiness, I don't want that. And what I mean to say is that sometimes you just want to wait for it to happen instead of doing something and actually maybe even finding it, because you don't know if you'll find it and it's not comfortable to go look for it. You don't know if it's comfortable to go for a week on vacation with your husband because you never tried it. It doesn't look like it's going to be comfortable. So you'd rather stick to your comfort zone of the routine, the coil, the work. This I can handle. That I don't know if I can handle. But maybe if you don't ever do that, you don't ever put yourself in the position where you're going to be with him a long time, or take walks with him, or schmooze with him, or go sightseeing with him, or invest in something with him together and try to be united. You don't know if that's going to do it. And very often people get stuck on where they're comfortable and they don't want to entertain leaving their comfort zone to seek happiness. That's one. Another idea, sometimes people actually know what will make them happy, but they don't want to either say it, or they don't want to express it, or they don't want somebody to feel burdened by it, or whatever it is. You might know that you would enjoy if your husband was lighter and more fun, or you could enjoy some certain things with him. You know that that's what would make you happy, but for whatever reason, you want it to happen on its own. You don't want to say it, or you don't want to ask for it, or you don't want to feel guilty, whatever it is. But again, I think that would be a wonderful thing if you could tell your husband. Like I said before already, I was mentioning that you should probably tell him that you're unhappy and that you think it's your issue. But you could also tell him that you think you would be happier if he would play a game with you after supper. And you know what? Maybe he would. Maybe he's just not thinking of it. And maybe you want someone who's going to think of it and initiate it as well. And maybe you even know what it would take to make you happier and you're just not going for it. So it's very similar to the idea of not leaving your comfort zone to make it happen. Because it's very comfortable to just not say anything. And it's not so comfortable to be vulnerable. To make sure that when you say it, you don't blame him or make him feel bad for not initiating. Or you should really do this, men, do this, men. Nothing with men, nothing with women, nothing with blaming. Be clear about what you think might make you happier and ask for it. Another two points that I want to mention in terms of getting help is only because some people, in this letter it sounds relatively okay. There are people who, these kind of thoughts of, I don't enjoy my husband's presence, maybe we're not a good match, maybe we shouldn't have kids together, maybe I want to marry someone else, maybe this is not going to last, maybe it's going to get worse. A lot of those thoughts are actually what hold people back from letting things gradually work out. Some people just never settled on the fact that, yes, this is the person I married, this is the person I'm going to live with. That thought, that acceptance, that acknowledgement, it gives a person a certain motivation to make it work, because this is the person I'm married to. Now, some people, even though they're not actually considering Chas v'Shalom leaving the marriage, but they still keep on OCDing on, but did I marry the right person? And that thought is very debilitating, if that's the right word. And if you do feel that you need help, because nothing I said so far is helping you at all, nothing about perspective, nothing about making changes, and you feel that you want to talk to someone, that's wonderful, and you might benefit from it. Just make sure you're going to someone who can help you and not cause more confusion. I talk about this all the time. Many people who have gone for help on a specific problem ended up staying in help, which wasn't helping, so it's not help, but they ended up staying there, and every day just getting new problems. Every day new problems. And you ask someone, you think you can help me with this? Sure, you just come. Just keep on coming. And how long will it take? Well, take a month. And after a month, it would have taken a month, but we uncovered new problems and old traumas and relationship issues, and call your husband, and call your mother-in-law, call your baba, and it caused a lot of confusion. If you're going to someone, make sure you're going to someone who can stick to the issue, understand what it is, see if this changes, understand what they're helping, and not cause more confusion and problems. In ending, I want to mention two things over here. One is that, of course, you want to daven to Hashem about this and everything, because Hashem is the answer to everything. Everything. You want to ask Hashem. And not only do we ask Hashem for everything because we ask Hashem for everything, but in this case specifically, you're asking for chayin. What you're looking for is chayin. You're looking for chayin. You want your husband to be noisa chayin by you. You want him to be attractive to you. You want to like him. You want to be attracted to him. Chayin is something that comes from Hashem. It's amazing. So I used to quote it from Svurim. You see how the whole idea of Nesiyas Chayin, somebody buys, somebody sells, the seller is selling something because it lost the chayin, he doesn't want it anymore. The buyer is noisa chayin, and that's how Hashem makes things happen. He switches around chayin all over the world. And the siyas chayin is something we ask for every day. We ask Hashem every day for chayin. The people that are noisa chayin by certain people, but people are not. It's amazing. Last week I went to someone for a tzedukah tzvek. I was collecting money, and there was a line of people going in asking for money, and I was helping someone else, and the person who took us in was saying, you know, it's amazing, so many people come here throughout the day asking for money, and I don't know why Hashem makes that some people I'm just attracted to give to, and some people not. They could be the same cause, could be the same worthy, it could be even more or less, it makes no difference. Sometimes there's a certain chayin that's attractive, and wow, I want to help this person. And sometimes the person can be saying a sob story, it sounds 100% true, very authentic, very, a real pitiful situation. I don't know, it's just not, doesn't pull. You see that chayin is something that Hashem controls, and we don't control that. And if we know Hashem is controlling it, it just makes it easier to daven for, say, Hashem, you gave me a wonderful husband, thank you so much, like we mentioned before, talking to Hashem about it and saying, please give me the chayin. Please let him find favor in my eyes. And many men or many women could really benefit from simply asking Hashem and looking for the yeshia and just help this person find favor in my eyes. And I also wanted to end off with this last point of, I don't want anyone to think that this is okay, so it's a chassidish thing, it's a litvish thing, or it's a matter thing, or because we marry off people too quickly or too soon, and they weren't yet attracted, they thought they were attracted, we had to let them choose and decide. I could say that anything about this question and letter, I've seen in many situations, both with people who thought originally that there's something they want in marriage, both those who thought that it wasn't. And I won't say that there's a pattern. I can't say there's any kind of pattern in this at all. Sometimes we think that if only we'll let people choose more, have more time to think, and more attraction, and more whatever, that's what's going to do it. And very quickly, either that falls apart, and very quickly the other way around. Baruch Shem, when the Eibishter helps, there's chayin, and people who weren't attracted to each other become attracted to each other very naturally. And when Eibishter self, you know, we could all make it work. So just to summarize. It's important to know the difference between a regular and irregular problem, just not to panic. It's important to know the difference between a personal and an interpersonal problem, so not to blame. It's important to change perspective and try to focus on the good and see the good and know how to bite into it and enjoy it. And it's important to know how to help situations get better and do what it will take to make it better. Don't settle for less if there are things that you could do to make it better with Hashem's help. So hopefully when we're focused on making things better, and we're focused on living life sometimes as Zitzchik Satoyre, even when there's no time, and it's not enjoyable, but we know it's good, and remembering that, you know, that should Mishram help us focus on each other's qualities and good parts, and live together.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.